Welcome to episode 39 of Circles Off. I'm Rob Pizzola, joined by Johnny from BetStamp.
What's up, guys?
And we're going to get right to it and welcome in a guest that we've been looking forward to, our first guest of the year 2022. Anyone who consumes sports betting content has probably come along his stuff at some point or another over the years. I know that's how I found him. He's a senior strategist with Covers now, 14 years of NFL bookmaking and betting along the way. Adam Chernoff, welcome to Circles Off.
The barrel of guests that you guys have is running low, I can tell.
It's not. Not going to lie, we'd like to leverage your following in some capacity, which has blown up over the course of the last year. Congratulations to you for that. But you're doing good stuff, and certainly we want to get the name out there as well. So it's obviously, we think highly of you, or we wouldn't have you on this podcast either. But it's a little bit of kill two birds with one stone and leverage the following as well, Adam.
I understand, but I'm glad to talk with you guys too.
All right. Typically with our guests, we start with their betting background. We could probably do hours and hours with you. I know in the past I've read an article that you put up on the Medium, which was years ago. It was probably like 3 or 4 years ago, which I had read. I recall a few things here and there. I purposely didn't go through it again because I didn't want this to be stale. But I believe that you started in the poker space before the sports betting space, correct?
I did. And I don't even know if I call it like a start per se, but it was like the hook. And you guys will remember it well, I'm sure. A lot of people that probably, I would say, started betting from 2012 onward won't remember the score as a TV channel. They'll probably remember it as an app. But it was very much a TV channel in Canada for like a handful of years. And so I grew up in a small town in northern Saskatchewan and moved to Calgary, Alberta. So I went from 2,500 people in town to a million plus, and we ended up unintentionally in like a very wealthy neighborhood, which wasn't our family's background at all. And so it was like a huge switch for me, but I ended up in just a really uncomfortable spot in school, the end of grade 6 going into grade 7, and would come home and the cable network that we had at the house changed. And so I was exposed to the Score TV channel in like 2005, 2006.
Well, what channel was it? Channel was it over in Saskatchewan?
We didn't have it in Saskatchewan, but it was channel 30 in Alberta on Shaw. And so if you remember the channel, like it was the ticker with betting lines. Mm-hmm. It was just reruns of random poker tournaments. And then at night it was like court surfing.
Oh yeah. I love the stream. What do you remember it as? I remember it as channel 44.
44 for me as well, but it was headline sports prior to being the Score. I remember that. And I particularly loved everything. Like I remember all the poker programs. There was a lot of early MMA stuff as well that they were showing because they had the Score fighting series. This was right around the time when I started with the Score as a company as well, which was late 2009, something like that. But yeah, it was certainly for the sports fan at that time, it was like the premier TV station.
And the morning highlights were actually, in my opinion, better than the Sportsnet and SportsCenter stuff.
Oh, 100%. And like then it got into hardcore sports radio, which Rob, you obviously know very well, mm-hmm. but then they started doing the simulcasts. So in the afternoon, it was like Richard, Sarah, Cam, Gabe, the combination. And then they had the betting show before. So that was like the hook for me because I went from after school playing road hockey or whatever, baseball, whatever season it was with friends that I had in town to being in the city, knowing nobody. And so I come home and that was the channel that was on because that's what everything was on. So they had the poker broadcasts and I just naturally got hooked into that at like 12 or 13, which led me into the forum world online because naturally I wanted to play more and more. And so that was the hook for me to get into betting.
Okay, so you started, I guess, playing poker very casually. And then how did that transform into actually getting into sports?
So the forum that I was on for poker, like one of the first ones I remember was Rounders Paradise. And it was like a staking forum. I don't know how I got there, but it was I was playing at Paradise Poker and Titan Poker. And I'm like, it's like free rolls. And it's like you hope you win tokens to a sit and go or a couple of bucks. Like I was 13, 14. But within the forum, there was a chunk at the bottom for sports betting. And naturally, being a huge sports fan, playing it growing up, I started going in there and connected the point spreads and the totals to what I was seeing on the score on TV. And then the shows on Hardcore Sports Radio came on, and I started listening to those and getting, and I was like, okay, there's a world here. And that took me to Capper's Lounge, which was a betting forum. Boy, that was 2007 were my first posts. So I'm talking like 14, 15 years old. And I just, from there, with nothing else going on, just spiraled out of control for my intake of it and trying to consume anything. And that led to all sorts of different avenues. But that was really like the start and how I got into betting itself.
When you say that it spiraled out of control, more so that you were just consuming so much at once, or did it actually like, was it actually like a problem gaming thing for you when you were in your mid-teens?
That came later, but it started just like full interest and intrigue and everything. But like I went from just casually playing poker and having fun to like staying up till 1-2 in the morning on SBR looking at Justin Seven and JJ Gold posts and going in like the offshore bookie chit chat on the RX and like diving into like, what does all of this mean and trying to figure it out. And that was really like the start of it. And then from there, as I went through high school, got a little bit messy for sure.
Yeah. I think what you're describing is pretty much the exact same as me, except you were exposed to it a little bit earlier, like 12, 13, 14 years old. Whereas I was started to get exposed to that when I was probably mid-teens, grade 9, grade 10, but almost the exact same for me, where I just like was an avid sports fan, consumed sports daily, got involved with a lot of forums, started playing poker. Obviously, the Chris Moneymaker World Series of Poker was
huge.
The huge thing for me. All the sites that you listed for poker were the exact same for me. I still remember the Titan Poker win six man sit and goes, and you win 100,000, and I would win five in a row like all the time. And I was convinced that that software was out to get me. Like I would get pocket aces, pocket kings dealt to me very quickly. And I would actually fold them sometimes because I'm like, no, this is how I'm going to lose this 100,000. But I remember those so clearly.
Not only was the software potentially something going on there, but you have to wonder how many people were colluding to get that bonus where you sit 3 out of 6 at a table, you're on MSN or AOL Messenger on the side, and whoever's winning, you keep pushing to get him, because I think it was top two advanced, and then if you got so many firsts in a row,
correct,
then you got to the sixth to unlock it. But I mean, that was ripe for everything. But then you would get sports books like Bet Jamaica or like Nine or all of these different companies that like went from poker to like merged into sports. And so naturally within all these forums, there was like a massive crossover of promotion. And so you couldn't really do one without the other, but sports betting obviously just was so much closer to my interest. But that was like the time for all of that in those years.
So you go from that to eventually, I always die of laughter whenever I see the picture of you in that, like the white suit and the gold tie with you, like writing the numbers up on the board and whatever. You can correct me if that's wrong, but if I'm wrong, but I think that was in the Dominican Republic, Punta Cana, I think where that was. But you go from, you know, being a Canadian teenager, basically betting on sports, posting in forums, to a complete change in lifestyle. How did that come about?
So there's, yeah. So this is where the story gets kind of messy and disconnected. So things were not going well in the city for me whatsoever. And there was absolutely times where I was over my head for betting. I was like deep at the age of 16 and 17 into writing for a website called Top 10 Cappers. And it was like this massive tout site and they had all these people on there. But what I was doing for them was doing the write-ups for the handicappers because I was sort of recruited through forums because of the write-ups that I was doing about football. And they sent me a tax form and I was like, well, I can't send this tax form out because I'm 16 and I'm not from the States. And so it got really, really messy. And that led to me from Calgary without life going my way either, just never fitting in and sort of being out of that friend group. I dropped out of high school after grade 10. I didn't do the grade 11 year because it just, it wasn't working. And I was focusing on betting. And at the end of grade 11, it came to the spring and I was like, okay, there's like two paths here. Like I keep going down this route. I know things aren't going to be great, or I can go back and get grade 12. And so I convinced my mom and dad, as well as my grandma, that I could move back to where I grew up in Saskatchewan, do grade 11 and 12 in the same year, and then graduate with my friends. It was like sort of the last chance. And so I did that, luckily scraped by, and I got sort of the mercy pass from some of the teachers. But where the sort of connection to the Caribbean comes from, my graduating class was like 16 people. And I was the one guy who had the audacity to travel. And it's like, when you're in a town like that, anyone that's grown up in a small town listening knows that like you live there forever. Maybe you go to like the nearest city. And for everyone else, it's proven out true. Everyone either went back to the farm or they now live in Regina or Saskatoon. So I was the one guy that was going to travel. And I had a place booked in Antigua, and it wasn't betting intended. It was just like the cheapest place I could find on VRBO. And I booked it. And last second, like a week before grad, it got canceled. And so nobody believed that I was going to travel to begin with, but I had to prove them wrong because I was the one guy that said I was going to do it. And so from that point, it was a mad scramble to find a place to book. And the cheapest place that I could find happened to be in Bávaro, which is in the Dominican Republic, which is right next to Punta Cana, but it's actually the whole area. Punta Cana is the little village in the town. And so I ended up there shortly after graduation with in my head, like if you asked me what I was doing, it was betting, but in reality it was just like traveling to prove that I could actually travel.
Right.
And the last 13 years to get where I am is just complete luck.
Okay, so now you end up somehow running a bookmaking operation, correct?
So I left just before the season started that year, and I didn't know that betting had the extent that it did there, but it got to December and like, I was out of money, plain and simple. I had like a few weeks left at most, and it was like, okay, like I'm going back home. This is going to be embarrassing. Cause like I was the guy that was going to do it. And I ended up, it was just complete the right place at the right time. There was a guy in the bar that I went to frequently who just so happened refurbished and resold slot machines out of Davie, Florida to different casinos in the Dominican, in Panama, in Trinidad. And he had an interest in sports betting because people were talking about it at the time. And so at the bar, he asked me what I did. I said, I bet on sports, which was true, but I obviously didn't do it well. And I just completely BS'd my way into a job with him in Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago. And that's the simplest way to put it. He was from Wales, nice outgoing guy you put me in a lot of great positions, but like it was at a bar and he's like, I don't know who this kid is, but like, why not? And so he sent me to Port of Spain, Trinidad, which when I heard it, I was like, I don't want to go to the Middle East. Like I was convinced Trinidad was I had no idea, like zero clue of where Port of Spain was, where Trinidad was. And he sent me there on a whim that like, maybe he can do something with betting. And so I ended up in Port of Spain, Trinidad at age 18 in early December of 2010. I was a bookmaker.
Do you ever consider what your life might have been had you not ran into that guy at the bar?
100%. I would have, the temptation to get involved with any of the drug business there as a young white guy from Canada, just roaming around, it was everywhere every single day. And at that point in my life, the only thing I cared about was money. And the only thing I cared about was like being something that was different to the people that I grew up with back in Saskatchewan. And so it's like, I don't know how I would have ultimately dodged that. There would have just been too much temptation to get involved with it. And it would have not ended up well. But even back like in Canada, like I was just lost looking for money. Like that was the only thing that mattered. So like there's, when you're in that spot at that age, in that part of the world, you don't hear good stories about things that happen. So like, I don't know what would have transpired, but it would have ended up in a rough spot somewhere.
So what were you doing when you say you're a bookmaker? What specifically were you doing then?
So I, when I heard it, I was like, casino, slot machines. I was like, in my head, I was like, Vegas, lights, whatever. And I showed it. So the flight went from the Dominican to Panama and then to Trinidad. And we get off the plane and it's like a 45 minute drive from the airport. And we get to the casino and he drops me off. And it is, it's no joke. It's like a rundown multi-floor motel. And on the second floor above a Burger King, there was this sign that said Palms Members Club. And so what people might not know about Trinidad is casinos, there's a couple companies that have them, but then there's all of these different members clubs, which is essentially if you register as a member, whatever goes on behind the doors is generally acceptable. But if you're not a member, you're not allowed to go in. So it's like this barrier to entry to like sort of put your name on a line to say like, okay, I'm gambling. And so you go in and there was like, it's this tiny room with like weird crevices. There was clearly just like a bunch of motel rooms with the walls knocked out and then like extra space behind it. And so there's like 60 to 80 slot machines. There's a couple of bars and then there's four tables, two blackjack tables, a roulette table, and then Rum 32, which is a local card game. And like, there's no setup for sports betting or anything. And it was literally like, okay, what do you need? And to me, the only thing that came to mind was that scene in Goodfellas where they're erasing the chalkboard after he places the bet and everyone's running to the phone. And so I was like, well, let's start by doing a couple of whiteboards because I thought whiteboards were cheaper than TVs. Like LED boards were never, ever came in my mind, but it was whiteboards and we'll just take bets. And so we ended up going to like the, like a, in Canada, it's like the Michaels, but there it was just like the local craft store. We got whiteboards and markers and masking tape. And I just taped off sections on the board. And that's the picture you're laughing about was like, I was like, all right. And I just wrote in with erasable marker the lines for the game. And then we were taking bets. We had tri-sheet paper printed off. So it's like a white sheet, a yellow sheet, and a pink sheet. You give the bettor the white sheet. You put the yellow one in the cash and the pink one goes for the record. And like, that was it. And so people would come in and there were a couple of TVs and there was the bar and I would just go around to the tables and be like, do you want to bet on something? And people would just, no, was the majority of the answers. But there occasionally someone would be like, yeah, I want to bet on that. And like basketball was popular. Cricket was popular. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just copying websites online and writing the odds and then taking bets and just basically being paid to be there. It wasn't being paid much, but I got to eat for free. I got to drink for free, which was most important. And that's what it was for like 3.5 months.
Did you turn any profit for the club?
Yeah, but it was meaningless relative to anything else. Like there was, people were playing slot machines for like, you know, penny slots in Vegas that are like 1 cent times all the reels and lines. Right. So you're actually betting 80 cents, $1.60, whatever. These were like people, working class people betting literally a penny a spin, trying to get something. And like the table game limits were tiny. Like it was a rough place. And so like, there just wasn't the money for people to bet anything meaningful on sports. So you would go at like the end of the day and it was like a few $100 and you'd be like, wow, this was something. But like, I didn't know, like I was 18 in Trinidad. Like I was like, this is cool as hell, but it was at the, as irrelevant as it was in the grand scheme of things, like just even like the really basic lessons that I learned there kind of set me up for my next job, which was actually legitimate.
All right. So let's get into it then. The next job, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, so like after 3.5 months, like of drinking and watching sports and betting irrelevant money on everything in Trinidad, I went back to the Dominican because I was like, this is not like it became unsafe in a way, like looking as I was in that type of place. Yep. Walking around, like it wasn't a good fit. So I went back to the Dominican and it was a couple months off, but the same gentleman who put me in the spot in Port of Spain called. And he's like, I know a guy in the Bahamas who has a sports book. He's looking for workers. Was that something you're interested in? And like, again, I'm looking for money or anything that I can do to just avoid going home. So I I accept. I'm like, where can we meet? Can we call? He's like, no, he'll bring you to Nassau in the Bahamas. And I'm like, great. I've never been there. Let's go. And so it was literally a phone call. He's like, we'll buy you the ticket. We'll get you at the airport. And like, that was the first time in all of this where I was like, okay, this might actually not end up well, because I didn't know if I upset the gentleman that put me in the spot or like what was going on. I was like, this is kind of weird, just getting like the text and then the call to go. And I showed up, and sure enough, they picked me up and we're driving through like the streets of Nassau, and we pull up at a women's clothing store. And he's like, okay, let's go in. And at that point I was like, oh, like you feel a little weird in that situation. And we go in, and it's like a high-end women's clothing store. And we go to the back, and there's like the big wooden door that doesn't really look like a door, but it's placed in the wall. And he opens it, and inside is a lady sitting. She's got all these computers. There's servers back in the room. And it was their main server hub where they had just installed DGS software, which was an arm of Don Best back in that time, to put on their website to take bets from customers. So the website at the time was ParadiseGames.com, which was one of four licensed gaming operations in the Bahamas. And it was primarily a casino and lottery operation. So they took bets on the U.S. lottery, which is a very real thing in the Bahamas. But instead of paying like 500-1 for the pick threes like they do in the U.S., they were competing with other places in the Bahamas to pay upwards of 900-1 on the lottery. So these guys were legitimately betting hundreds of thousands of dollars a day on lottery bets off of U.S. lottery draws and televising them online and then running an online casino. And so sports betting for them was very much like an afterthought, but they had a very real gambling business, unlike the refurbished casino. And I didn't know how big it was at the time, but I was just there to meet everyone because I was going to be the guy that was changing lines and things like that. And so that was the introduction there. And I spent a week learning the software that they had just installed, seeing the retail operations that they had. And then they were like, okay, we don't want you in the Bahamas. And I was like, well, where do I go? Like, I didn't have any plans. And so they're like, you can be anywhere, but you can't be in the Bahamas if you're running the software.
Right.
And so I was like, all right. So I went back to the Dominican. And from that point on, it went for 5 years. We went through legalization. We went through the merger where Sherwin split off into Paradise Games. They became two different companies that competed with each other. And so it was Island Luck was number one. Sherwin became number two. Paradise Games was three. And then through a family connection, Chances Games, which is out of Freeport, was number four. And I was, by the end of the fifth year, doing all of the odds and all of the risk for those three sports books and serving their customer base. And so it was a very, like I say, legitimate business, but it was a legitimate bookmaking business where, again, it just was like making mistakes and learning on the fly. But that kept me going till the end of 2015 into 2016.
Did you actually enjoy doing what you were doing?
I did until I got married. Okay. I didn't realize how much I was actually doing until it was a year after marriage with my wife. We were living in Medellin, Colombia. And she was like, we've lived here for a year and we've not left the city, because I was on call essentially looking at this for 362 days a year. Like, it was every single day there was something. And especially during football season, which is just, it's massive there. And for the clientele they were taking, just enormous. It was every single day, all day. And so when I was by myself in the Dominican, whatever, I was going around with a laptop. I had the USB sticks. I had like everything to connect to the certain networks and the remote desktop. Like, I could get in from anywhere. It was amazing. So it was like, I'm getting paid to watch sports. I can be anywhere I want. Like, this remote lifestyle is phenomenal. Like, it didn't matter. I didn't have to like report in at certain times to people or be physically in one spot. I could just do whatever. And it was amazing. And I was getting paid well. And as it was growing, I was getting incentivized even more. But then like, you get married and you try doing that with life and everything. Like, it just became way too much. And so that's the only reason I ultimately left. If it was a little more manageable, I'd probably still be doing it.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I mean, also I can draw on similar experiences. I mean, it's different. It's just another person in the picture that you have to devote more time to. So I completely get it. Now we fast forward to now, 2022, which is roughly 6-7 years later from what you're talking about. And you have now made the shift from the bookmaking operational side of things into strategic, you know, advisor for covers, where you are producing a lot of content on your own. Was that something like that just hit you one day all of a sudden, you know, I'd like to get into the content space. I want to do this. Was it something like an industry trend that you wanted to take advantage of? What made you go from the shift of like the behind the counter type of stuff to helping the average better on the other side of things?
I don't know exactly like when it started, and like I could probably go back as far as like the forum days in like 2008, 2009. Like, there was always something I really enjoyed about at that time just doing write-ups, like to write something up and to have people look at it and learn something and reply to you and have like a community off of that. Like, that was, to me, it was like, wow, this is like, people value what I think. Like, this is quite something. And then while I was doing all of the bookmaking stuff, I didn't really do a lot of that. And I guess I didn't realize that I like missed doing that or having like at least some sort of like creative output of any kind. Like, I was just sort of, I had the software up, I had the monitors, and that was the extent of it. So I would say probably like somewhere around 2017, 2018, although I was kind of always there, that's when like the effort actually started. And it was just, it was a way to like be creative and enjoy doing things. And it's turned into like far more than I could ever imagine. But there was never like this time where I was like, okay, like this is what I have to do and I'm going to start doing it like now. It would just kind of happen very naturally and grew like from an organic way, which is why I think that some of the stuff that I put out gets the engagement level that it does, because it's just coming from me off of experience.
Well, we've noticed, like, obviously from the last couple of years, you've tried a bunch of different stuff as well, right? So you're not just sticking with like, oh yeah, I write one article a week. You had the text message service, Slack channel, different things like that. So I guess the question is more like, you know, what did you find works? Why all the shifting around, you know, I guess trying different things, and what was the best success? Because a lot of people stick to one avenue.
Sure. I think if you're doing anything in content, you have to try different things and try different platforms. And I mean, in betting specifically, like it was forums forever, and then it shifted and it was Twitter forever. And now like podcasts have obviously emerged, but it's very sort of like bucketed. And there's a lot of like the tech and the platforms and the mediums are growing far more than the creative output is from a betting perspective. And so for me, over the last kind of 4 years, it was just trying different things. In a way to be first maybe, but also just out of like curiosity. And so like when I started the Slack channel in 2017, that grew into something significant. It lasted 3.5-4 years. The text message list, not nearly as successful. The podcast has been like just wildly successful, way more than I ever imagined. So that's by far been the biggest, but it was not anything more than just being curious and trying different things and seeing what worked or trying to deliver messages in different ways.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Adam, what do you think are, the biggest challenges, let's say, in the sports betting space right now in terms of producing content, like inherent challenges that you might face regularly?
This can go a lot of different ways. Speaking from like the business side that I'm now on with covers in that role, finding new talent is extremely difficult, but also extremely competitive. A lot of, maybe people don't know, but TV networks are going after a lot of like big names with lucrative offers to sort of lock that up. And we've seen some of the deals come out in the last even like 3 to 4 months have taken what the content value is actually worth and just sent it through the roof. Like, and a perfect example is like the McAfee deal.
Yeah.
Like bet it because we like it or don't, that is a massive influence in the betting space. And so when other people that are starting out see a guy like that get 100 million plus for a deal, for a show that, like, in their mind, they don't think is very good because the betting content on it is relatively low brow, but you see that price tag associated with it, all of a sudden, when you're like, it just changes the demand, and it changes the opportunities that you can have with people. Like, there was a time where anyone would go out of their way to be on just like the worst produced show ever that was seen by 20 people. Mm-hmm. And now it's like just simple requests to like beat writers or anyone that's associated with a team. We were trying to do coverage of the national championship, and like, you're reaching out to guys that cover teams, and you're like, can we borrow 3 to 5 minutes of your time for a quick segment? And they're like, yeah, here's my price. And you're like, whoa. Right. And so it's from not only like the bettors side and the people that do this and create actually like great, valuable content, that's challenging to find in its own right. But now the people that you could actually use to provide like useful supplementary information to bettors that they could find useful, that's now getting extremely expensive. And so it's becoming really tough to find things that you can use and people you can hire as talent to expand and grow. That's the biggest challenge right now from the business side. From a personal side, that's changing quite a bit too.
I want to just hit on one thing that you said right at the beginning there, which was the finding talent. I mean, you explained a lot of it after the fact about the prices associated with a lot of the talent now, which I've noticed the same thing. My first job in a professional capacity was producing radio, where I used to book guests where prices didn't even come up. The only person that I ever paid for anything, for any sort of hit, was Mike Florio. And this was literally 12 years ago at the time. It wasn't even, you know, Pro Football Talk wasn't even close to the size of what it is now, but we paid Mike Florio. But in terms of finding talent, obviously with regulation happening and sports betting being less taboo, you would figure that there would be an influx of new people into the space that are willing to produce content. When you're talking about finding talent in specific, is it just that the influx of these people into the space, they're too raw, uneducated on the space, where it becomes difficult or challenging to produce any sort of content with them?
I'd say there's two problems. The first is definitely that there's just, if you're really good at betting in general, you don't want to do content. And I think as much as people say that is to protect their edge, or they don't want to give anything away, which is definitely real for some people, there's no doubting that. I think in general, as bettors and gamblers, what you need personality wise to do that at a high level in general does not correlate with being overly entertaining and enthusiastic on camera. And like, it's, I think there's truth to that, but there's not a lot of people that can do it. The second thing would be that a lot of the people that come out and want to do it don't see a podcast like this or shows we're doing at covers or other content that the three of us would hold in high regard as like what they aspire to be. Mm-hmm. They see Barstool. They see these entertainment guys on TikTok and YouTube that are throwing out ridiculous things that are more like on the entertainment side, which certainly has a place, but that's what they're now aspiring to be and what they're aspiring to do, because they see the clicks and the hits and the views that come with that and associate it with long-term money and value. And so there's even the people that have like an interest, that entertainment side is becoming a lot more appealing because that's where a lot of people are getting paid, compared to like the informative and education side, which is never going to grow at the same rate, but in my opinion has a much higher retention rate long-term to holding an audience. And so that's kind of the second issue that we have is like everyone's being enticed to go to a different side of the industry.
Yeah, we personally see that on our end as well. I mean, we're obviously trying to grow BetStamp, or we're trying to grow this podcast, and we do have a TikTok account now and an Instagram account, and we're trying to figure out ways to produce content that is geared towards the people that are consuming content on TikTok, but still make it educational in some capacity. And it's definitely a challenge because that's just a platform where it's quick. People like to look at things that are entertaining and, you know, things that could potentially go viral. And telling someone, you know, how they should bet a teaser, for example, is not making for the most engaging content on a platform like that.
I'll give you a really good example on top of that of like, I think, and it's a huge challenge for me daily, but I spent the first 7 months at the company on the product side. And I was tasked with changing the odds screen that they have. And I was getting feeds. I was getting quicker times. I was getting more markets. I was doing all of these things and trying to get all these vendors to make it the quickest it can be. The biggest jump we saw in engagement with the users, and this page is reaching 250, 300,000 unique users a month. Massive. The biggest jump we saw in that 7 month time, despite doing all of these things, was putting logos on the table. And so it's like, we think about when we're doing all this stuff, like there's this content that we're doing and we're like, okay, we got to make it like basic because we're going to like really appeal to the users. And so we're like, well, let's say things clearer. Let's explain stats. Let's start with, like you said, teasers or line shopping or anything like that. And even that, like the most basic level for the average bettor that's now being like created within this wave of regulation is like way at the top level advanced. And so it's like that the whole spectrum of like what people think is important is like completely shifting too, which is making it really tricky.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a challenging space. We had Preston on one of our previous episodes, Sports Cheetah, for those who follow him on Twitter, who I thought really did an amazing job of this when he was on Daily Wager on ESPN, which was taking these extremely advanced concepts and just, pardon the lack of the term, but really dumbing them down so that someone could understand them easily. And I still think that there is some value in that. And I just wonder whether it's maybe the platforms that this content is appearing on right now or why the recreational / casual bettor does not gravitate to that at all. And maybe it's for me, like very difficult to get out of my mindset where if you told me when I was 20 years old, here, you're losing money, Rob, on sports betting, you can do these three things and you're very likely going to be a long-term winner. I would have absolutely absorbed that and loved that. But for some reason or another in this space right now, it seems like that type of stuff just falls by the wayside and the daily picks content surfaces to the top. The TikTok videos of people making picks by having, you know, their cat pick which bowl they're going to eat out of or whatever, like that type of stuff seems to just is driving tons of engagement. And maybe this is like, you know, I'm 35 years old. I'm not a boomer by any stretch of the imagination, but Adam, I just don't get it, man. Like, I don't really get it.
Look at the most popular tweet in betting so far this week. It was a picture of Julian Edelman betting $500,000 that he was paid to promote the tweet with, or $100,000 on a parlay on two futures that were like at the worst price in the market.
It was Bucks. And like, it was a
Bucks Patriots Super Bowl. $100,000 to win, right? 545. And a terrible price, by the way. Like anyone could find a better price easily within a second.
On just the Patriots.
But nobody cares, right? Because it's like that's what's working right now. But like to your point, what I believe in, and I know the team at Covers believes in, is there's all of this noise going on everywhere. And that's going to last for a long time. And that's what people want in general at scale right now. And there's stuff like what you guys are doing. There's stuff that we're trying to do. It's what I'm trying to do on the podcast every day myself, where there's actual value behind the content that's educational and teaches people. For me, it's about teaching people to lose less. I'm probably not going to turn everyone into a winner with my content, but maybe you ultimately smarten up one day and you don't want to lose as much. I might help you do that with some of the stuff I do. Over time, that's going to cut through. And so like we're intentionally not aggressively shifting to try attract all these people because we know that one day that's not going to be what people value the most like they do right now. And by just continuing to do it now, we know there's long-term value someday when it shifts, because the more noise there is, the more people are going to be able to see and call it out when it happens. And the more that actual genuine content is going to shine through within that noise. So it's going to take time, but I think it shifts back at least sometime in the near-ish future.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I'm hopeful of that as well. There's a common criticism in this content space right now. I get this a lot. In fact, it was like part of, I had a negative engagement with Kelly in Vegas on Twitter this week, who I would have considered a friend of mine at one point as well, who kind of referenced something along the same lines of this as well. But, you know, the same 20 to 30 people are appearing on each other's podcasts all the time. One Twitter user, pardon the French, excuse to refer to this in my mentions as a giant circle jerk of podcasters in the sports betting space. Anyone who is not part of this inner community of people is disrespected, so on and so forth. Do you feel that there's like any validity to that criticism of, you know, it's just the same people that we're regularly seeing in the content space and other people are not being given a chance?
I don't agree with the not given a chance part. Back to sort of what I was saying earlier, where there's like, there's all the chance in the world to do anything you want in content right now. I genuinely believe that a lot of the people that are good at betting that wants to do content just take that stance because they're just not going out of their way to do it. There's like, and I think that we generally have probably felt that at one time where it's like, well, I don't want to do this because it's going to like hurt my reputation to be on this show or whatever. Or like, do I want to associate with that guy or whatever it might be? I think there's all the opportunity in the world for anyone to do content that they want. But I think, again, like it ties back when you see the same handful of guests on different shows, it's because it's either really hard to find people or when you're trying to do something like this that's more on the educational side, if you're bringing people on, there's only so many people that are going to be able to speak to that conversation and actually do it. And so I don't look at it as a negative. I look at it as like a massive opportunity for all of the people who may want to do content, but just have never gone out of their way to do it, to like step up and do it. Cause like, again, like I'm speaking from our side, like it is brutally difficult to find anyone that has like a general idea of what they're talking about when it comes to betting, let alone someone that actually has experience. And so like there's so much potential for people to come out and do it. They just have to do it. But I think that's why we're seeing so many people repeat.
I can see that side of the argument because I think back to when I was growing up and the people I was exposed to in the betting space were all the same people. I'm not going to name names because that's not what this is about, but it was the same people regularly, mostly touts who are given a platform on TV at the time. But also once we started getting like some sort of video versions on Twitter, Vine was a thing at the time, which was basically TikTok when I was younger or whatever. But I think back to that now and I'm like, well, you know what? I saw the same dozen people over and over and over. And now I'm more nuanced in the sports betting space. And those people had no idea what they were talking about. So I wonder if there's people that are coming into the space now that are thinking potentially the same things. I keep seeing the same people over and over selling me BetStamp and covers and unabated and whatever. All of these have some sort of ulterior motive or some incentive to grow their product. Should I be listening to them type of thing? So I can see that side of the argument. I don't necessarily buy it, but I think that is something that is brought up since a lot of us are associated with products now as well.
Yeah. And I mean, you guys probably as a show have the most professionally skewed audience or like advanced skewed audience of any betting show out there. There's maybe like one or two others I could think of that would be like kind of closer on that same level. And so like, unless people saw my name and they skip past the show and they're waiting for next week, but if they didn't and they're listening and they got this far to me ramble, and I'm sure that there's so many people that listen to it, they're like, if they just reached out to you guys as like their first appearance, you would probably welcome them on as like a different name or a different experience level in the same way that we would love to have that happen for us too. Like we're looking for people, plain and simple. And so it's like, if you're sitting in that position and you're frustrated with the same people being on the same shows or the same networks and you hate what they say, and you know that like you're better at betting than that person that you're seeing on the show, like there's never been a better time to send a direct message and be like, can I come on for 10 minutes? Like, it would be amazing.
Fair enough. Okay. So let's move on from the content. I think you brought up a lot of good points. Like I agree with you when you're saying there's going to be a breakthrough eventually, because the reality is, for most of the, you know, advice I would give to anyone on like betting, it's just like, okay, bet what you want, but just shop around and get the best price. That's like the simplest thing you can do. So it's not even like, oh, do this research, do this. It's really just like bet literally whatever you want. Pick a game for whatever reason that makes you happy. You know, you're a Leaf fan. You want to bet the Leafs, bet the Leafs. But just shop around and get the best price. That's it, right? So eventually, like, that is not really good content. It's not very like exciting and stuff like that. Everyone wants to hear like the whole, James Harden's out, Kevin Durant is out, this guy, bet this, because all, like, they don't really understand it's factored in, all things like that already. So I got you. I think one day, you know, hopefully it breaks through in terms of like a little bit more educational content. But for now, even the recreational stuff right now, it's like, it's all fine. It's all there. And as long as it's getting people excited and making them have more fun betting, there's obviously a place for it. But moving on from the content stuff, I wanted to talk about your betting right now. So I know you had a, from what I could see, obviously I don't have the exact records in front of me, but a pretty solid football season to date. I don't know if you're going to include playoffs, but regular season's over. I know you had a pretty solid season. Let's talk about your betting. What are you betting right now? Is it just NFL? Anything else? How's everything going? Your process? Maybe just give a quick overview.
It's a fraction of what it once was in terms of volume or output. During that time through the Dominican, working in the Bahamas, living in Colombia, was playing and still, like, looking back, like, was making good money, but betting like way over my head. Like, the numbers, I look back and it was like, what was I doing? Now it's a fraction of that. And again, a lot of that stems back to like that sort of realization I had, where it was like, this is like a couple of years ago, I was looking at it and I was like, am I doing this when I'm 35, 45, 55? It's like the amount of effort it took for me to just stay semi-competitive and just get a little bit out of what I was doing at that level. I was like, I'll be dead by the time I'm 35 or broke a lot sooner. And so it was like, I've scaled things back in an enormous way. Betting NFL, as I always have, and probably always will. I'll take my little bit here and there. I still have connections to South American soccer leagues, and I'll play some of the domestic stuff as well as the international cups, just because I feel like the info is good, but then also I enjoy following it. I enjoy watching it. This year, I'm not going to be doing a lot of golf, because again, like, I could see it. Like, I couldn't compete anymore, especially with matchups. It just wasn't there. The effort I had wasn't there. So it's a lot less, but it's a lot of NFL. It's a lot of South American soccer in the off season. And now what is kind of occurring in Canada, we're not regulated yet, but I don't know if you guys know, but there's 26 different, we'll call them offshore sports books, unregulated, in Canada right now, with like 26 different offers, and they're all starting to offer daily specials and boosts. So like, there's a lot of money up for grabs that, like, I've played a long time at like 6 or 7. I didn't realize there was another 20 plus out there. It's like they have such easy access. And so once football starts, I'll be probably trying to get up as much of that money that's just sitting there as I can before we get into regularization in Ontario.
I'm sure it'll be a good couple of weeks until you're limited to pennies, but it should be a fun couple of weeks for sure.
It goes quick, but it's out there.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Good to hear. In terms of like the betting stuff, just one follow-up question on the NFL stuff. Like, so are you basically like, you know, originating? I know you're betting a lot of like the opening numbers, things like that. Like, what, talk us a little bit through your process if you want to get into that. If not, you know, we can cut this out. It's all good.
No, for sure. So I've always played some extent of openers. This year, it's more than I usually have, just because for me, what I'm playing, like, of what you guys are betting, like, it's not competitive to what you guys are doing. And so I'm playing a lot more. About 30 to 40% of what I played this year was Sunday night, Monday morning stuff. The rest of it was later on Monday or Tuesday. But it's just, for me, where I am now, betting at the level I am, I'm not running into the same issues you guys are or past guests have had, because I've lowered it down so much just because of where I am. And so, yeah, I'm playing a lot of those openers. Have played a little bit more into the prop markets than I usually have this year, just based on some connections I've made over the last year or two and taking a bit of a different approach to that. But then otherwise, it's primarily kind of Monday night, Tuesday stuff that I'm playing earlier in the week. Cause like, I'm not going to be competitive betting late in the week. I know that. And I know who's betting Sunday night, Monday morning. I know what people like to bet. I know where it's coming from. I know what's good or bad. If I'm waiting till Saturday night, Sunday morning, and it's Star Lizard laying off a quarter mil on a game that I'm betting, like, I don't have a chance at that. There's no way. And so it's like, I know my limitations now, and I'm not in a spot like life-wise where I want to like push and try to get back to there. Cause it's just, I did it for a handful of years, and it was a lot on the old day-to-day life and lifestyle that I enjoyed it, but it's just where I am now. It's just not what I'm pushing for.
Yeah. Might be honestly the best answer we've ever gotten for one of these questions. Like I respect that.
I compare it like a good golf analogy. You guys are playing the tips. I realized that like I'm not shooting in the 70s anymore playing from there. So I moved up to the white tees, and I'm happy playing there, and I'm getting what I can.
What tees are you actually playing though in your golf life now?
Well, in real golf life, that's going the other way.
Okay.
And I think that's why I'm a lot happier of a person.
There's probably a direct correlation between
inverse correlation. More time spent on the golf course, less time spent betting. Yeah,
100%.
I'm very jealous of, I've seen the simulator pictures that you have. And I think you've been working on your swing over the course of the winter, which is our houses are so clustered together, at least in my neighborhood, it's very difficult to get a simulator in anywhere, single car garage, basement with low roof and stuff like that. So I dig that setup. That's like my passion right now is I need to get through winter to get back to golf season, Adam.
I don't know if you guys felt it, but like, I know the pandemic was incredibly hard on a lot of people, but like, and I'm not taken away from that. But I tell you, like that lockdown that started mid-March, that out here anyway, like it carried through the summer. And it was like, your only options are to go outside with the dogs or golf. Like those months where you weren't thinking about sports, you weren't settling up, you weren't chasing anything down. Like that was like, to me, a massive eye opener. Cause like there was not really a break for like 7-8 years there. It was just constantly pushing and pushing and pushing. Like to have that eye opener and like being on the golf course on a Wednesday morning and not worrying about injuries or something moving and just being able to enjoy it. Like that was, to me, that was like, wow, I missed this. And so that was a big change for me.
Those were arguably the best days of my life. I'd be completely honest with you, just knowing that you can play and not have to check the phone in the middle of a round to see what's going on. Those were great. I do miss those. I miss that break. It's the grind of being a sports bettor is the reality. It's a lot of work. I don't think people really understand the day-to-day effort that needs to go into it and just being available all the time. Like I go into a movie theater and sometimes I can't even turn my phone off. Like I have to leave it.
It doesn't end.
It just doesn't end.
I went in another, like just quick story on this. So in October, there was a betting group out of California. You guys probably know them, but I met the guys in Kansas City. One of them's from KC and is a huge Chiefs fan. And like they bet a ton. And we went to the game against the Bills and we were all staying together in one house that they had. And so there was the full day of tailgating. It was the Bills Chiefs game with the rain delay, mm-hmm. with everything that went on. It was the Uber back and forth. We get back and it's like 1:30 in the morning after being out all day. And there was the Jets Falcons game early. So we were all up at like 8 anyway. It was 1:30 in the morning and we all got home and I pull up the laptop and I looked through box scores quickly after every game. Just, it was like keeping me up to date. Cause I didn't watch anything. He sits down with the paper, two phones, and he's settling everything up and he's doing all of his figures and we're just chatting. And I'm like, I'm going back to bed. And I had the flight at like 4 a.m. coming back to Canada. I got up to like a couple hours later to go back. He's still there settling and doing it. And just And I'm like, I remember being in that spot and like the guys are awesome, but like, I'm like, man, like this is, it's so much more than what people look at the surface level, where it's just betting and watching games and having fun. Like all of that extra stuff, it's exhausting, especially over the course of a year, if you might not have things going well. But like, that's the whole side of it that's not out there that I don't know if people are fully aware of.
I think in pretty much any job, whether it's sports betting or not, there's people that are ambitious and they have an addiction to the craft and they just really want to be really good at what they do. And that's something that's always affected me personally. I obviously don't want to lose money because it's my livelihood. But on top of that, I just don't want to waste time. I want to spend time improving. And it gets to a point where you can go over the top on it a lot. Like even during winning stretches, I'm spending more time honing my craft. Like what else could I possibly be doing to get an even bigger advantage? And sometimes you need to take a step back. I mean, we've had Rufus on quite a bit. He's obviously been very public about meditating and Buddhism and things of that nature. And I've had a chance to speak with him a couple times. And I honestly, you know, sometimes I'm like, I should really listen to this guy's advice and just do some things for myself every now and then and get away and stop thinking about the opportunity cost of me not being at a computer. You know, like I watched Yellowstone on, which I know you're a fan of, Adam, but like I'm catching up on it while I'm scouring Twitter for NHL news and NFL news as well. I can't even really pay attention to the show. I have to like rewatch episodes and stuff like that. And it just becomes very cumbersome at times. So it's not a rant about my personal life, but I think it's just, you know, you hit a lot of good points and a lot of things that hit home with me, but particularly the amount of time and dedication it needs to beat something like golf, as an example, when you're betting into a market that's shaped by some very, very strong bettors.
Yeah. Good luck watching Yellowstone on a Tuesday night. If you're betting on golf, you're dead.
Right.
It's just, it owns you.
Right. One thing that's always, I've always been curious about, I don't know you well. And I guess from a social perspective, I've probably been following you for 3 or 4 years. I think I first came across you maybe doing Matchbook podcasts as well. I might be wrong about that. But to my recollection, I don't recall you ever betting on daily sports, whether that's NBA, MLB. But most importantly, and what really gets me is you're Canadian. You spent the first 18 years or so of your life in Canada. I've never seen you make a comment on hockey or hockey betting ever. And I'm just curious why that is.
The last, I don't remember what year it was, but the last hockey game I remember watching, even like more than like a period of whatever year Halak was with the Habs and was just like ridiculous in the playoffs, making 40, 50 saves a night. So whatever that year was the last time I watched hockey. And really it was like once I left Saskatchewan, especially in that grade 12 year, like there was no hockey anywhere I went for the better part of 8 years. Like anywhere whatsoever, no reference of it, wasn't on TV, wasn't going out of my way to watch it. And so like, just from that, got into football for a while, was into golf, enjoyed some tennis and then soccer, which was just kind of with the cycles. But it was just, I think it was part of that, just what I was exposed to when I was learning about betting and actually doing it at a high level. But now it's just like that almost kind of tainted my interest going forward, where it's just kind of what I was getting at, where it's like the daily, every single day, having a bet, being involved in something. Now with that being less interesting to me, it's maybe not a coincidence that I'm not doing it, just like I'm not watching it and sort of getting away from doing that as itself. So I think that's probably why it's just kind of the culmination of things.
Yeah, I just find it interesting. To each their own, obviously, whatever sports you like. I mean, it's very subjective. You bet on whatever you want to bet on. You watch whatever you want to watch. I've just always found that interesting with you spending the majority of your life in Canada and not really, you know, you can't really get away from that stuff. Like you turn on a highlight show at night, it's very difficult to find NBA or MLB highlights. Like your lead off is hockey. And I mean, that's always been a challenge. I mean, that's part of the reason why I bet so much hockey is I think I just naturally gravitated to it because I was around it for my whole life.
Yeah. I mean, and to that point, like I don't have a subscription to Sportsnet because it's all hockey and basketball. And so it's like my TV is the NFL Network, the Golf Channel, or whatever the wife is watching. And like, it doesn't deviate too far from that unless it's for a live game. And it's just, sometimes I wish it was different because I grew up enjoying it. I was a Flyers fan in the 90s with Lindros, Recchi, LeClaire, and like they had an awesome, so it was fun to watch that. My dad's a huge Leafs fan. But it's just once I kind of left from that environment, that was it for me.
We got another one here who doesn't want to get a good cable package to live bet.
Johnny makes fun of me all the time because I do the Twitter stream the last couple of weeks, and I'm using a streaming package from Bell, which is like 20, 30 seconds behind real time. I refuse to get actual cable nowadays because I don't need it anymore.
He doesn't want
to
pay literally $50 a month.
It's not the
he doesn't want to pay $50 a month to get regular cable, Adam. And listen, we literally had Eric Eager from PFF. We had him on the podcast on the Twitter space.
He was behind. I was listening.
And Rob is
Eric was telling him to play before it happened.
Rob's behind. It's literally the Chargers are coming back. Fourth and 10. Literally, think about how many fourth down completions they had there on that last drive. And plus the last touchdown. And everyone, Eric's like, oh my God. And then Rob's like, and then it would be wait another 30 seconds, and he'd be like, the play is known right now. I'm just going to wait for Rob to catch up. Everyone on Twitter Spaces is watching the game. They see Rob's reaction. He's like, oh, Mike Williams got it on 4th and 10. It was literally ridiculous.
Two things about this.
I'm getting you a cable package.
I don't want it. You can keep the cable package. Two things about this. One, I don't care about having games spoiled for me. It's never been a problem. I consume Twitter during Red Zone on NFL Sundays, and again, I'm 30 seconds behind, so I know something is going to happen before it happens, and the reactions on Twitter are never specific. It's never like, oh, what a great pass. It's just like, oh my God, OMG, OMG, like crazy stuff like that. So I know something's coming. I like the adrenaline rush of that. The second thing is, from a pure listener perspective, don't you, like, I think it's kind of cool that a listener could be watching the game in real time, and then knowing something is coming and get the reaction of the host after the fact. Like, you know what I'm getting at?
Haven't you wish you could just, you know, the commentary on the TV was just 10 seconds behind 20. Haven't you always wished that, you know, even 30 seconds behind sometimes would be awesome, right? Cause you could get the touchdown, long touchdown bomb, wait 30 seconds. And then you can get he's deep touchdown. You know, wouldn't that be great if that was 30 seconds delayed? Come on.
First of all, like, I don't know how you comfortably sit on the couch and don't have just a remote to flick through things after the game is over. Like, to me, that's the whole benefit of having cable, is it just like mindless occupation without loading time. But on that stream, I don't know how you did that comfortably being behind. Cause like, it was a really great stream, especially in the fourth quarter with Eric. And like, you were obviously playing at a disadvantage, and you kept it entertaining the whole time. So like, there's skill in that too. So it was like, to me, it was part showing off as well.
I appreciate that. I mean, I am a professional. I do put a lot of effort into this. The only time I've watched live football this year, truly live, was when I was going on the Covers halftime show with you, Adam, where like I joined at the 2-minute warning and I had my stream going. And Covers had the stream going, and I'm trying to time the difference. And it was like, it was about 30 seconds difference. And I was like, I would have really joined late. I would have joined after halftime if you didn't tell me to join at the 2-minute.
Bell 5 TV is being installed at your house next week. I'm calling it into your house. You can't even control it, by the way. If I just install it at your house.
I've had the long story, and I'm sorry to derail this, Adam.
This is important.
People might want to know this. If it hasn't been, it's been discussed before. I swore off cable a few years ago when I was with, I only want to say the company, but I was with a company. First couple weeks of the regular season, everything's going smoothly. I'm watching Red Zone. Week 3 comes, I sit down, I go to turn on Red Zone 3 minutes before the game start, tells me that that channel's not available. So I'm like, no, this can't be right. I go to my online account. I have the channel. Everything in my billing is correct. So now I have to call this company. I have to wait on hold for 40 minutes before someone gets to me. So I've missed the first 40 minutes now of 1 o'clock NFL, which is going to drive any NFL fan insane. I get a customer service rep that tells me, oh, sir, you're on the wrong channel. Flip over to this. So I flip over to what he tells me, and it's NFL Network. I'm like, no, buddy. I don't want NFL Network. I need NFL Red Zone. He's like, no, this is NFL Red. I'm like, no, I'm a season. I do this for a living. I'm telling you, this is the wrong channel. I spent 10 minutes arguing with this guy. And at the end of the mid conversation, I said, cancel everything.
Well, was this Bell or Rogers?
It was Rogers.
Okay. So you're getting Bell 5 TV to your house.
It was.
No, don't hold a grudge. Also, someone asked on Twitter for Canada. This is important. If a couple people are asking it, I'm going to answer for all. Someone asked, they're like, hey, I'm in Toronto. Johnny mentioned on the pod. we want the fastest cable for live betting. Like, what would you recommend? Like Rogers, Bell, whatever. So for US listeners, sorry, I don't know the answers, but for Canadian listeners, Rogers Ignite TV. And again, no gripe against Rogers. They're a great company and it is what it is. Rogers Ignite TV is not real time. If you have that Ignite box, you are on a minimum 45 second delay for NFL.
At least.
And like you're toast. See ya. Rogers Ignite TV, try and charge you $160. Sayonara. You know what you're going with? Best bang for your buck. If you want the best up-to-date service, you're going Rogers Digital Cable, not Ignite TV, or you're going Bell Fibe TV with the 4K box that's actually plugged in. If you use the other receivers, they're about 4 to 5 seconds delayed. So 4K box, Bell Fibe, or Rogers Digital, not Ignite TV, sayonara Ignite TV. They got me with it, and I was very, very disappointed. So we both have a gripe to pick with Rogers, actually, I guess. But that's the answer. We answered the guy on Twitter who just asked that. We answered you as well, but now everyone gets it on the podcast. Sorry, Adam.
Rob's explanation, that's a Canadian Seinfeld episode right there, that back and forth. You're just holding out of spite. Just not to have it
now with the amount of anything. With the amount of profanity I was using, it was more like a Curb episode and it wasn't a Seinfeld episode.
But guys kill themselves. Like, you know what? Cancel my service. I'm watching every single game 35 seconds delayed for the rest of my life. How's that? What's going on?
You know, the best part about this whole, like, years after the fact, the Score was purchased by Rogers, the Sportsnet. The TV side moved over there. So a lot of my close friends ended up and are still at Sportsnet. Where one of them reached out to me a couple years ago, like, we can get you free service, Rogers. I'm like, no, I'm not out of principle. I'm not doing it. Absolutely. That one guy, I don't remember his name. I don't care what it was, but he talked to me like I was an idiot and I didn't know what channel I was on. I'll never go to Rogers again. They'll have to pay me to take their service. That's it.
All right.
Now, the one thing the people in the States have an advantage over us is, they either have the local radio, which covers all the football and basketball games, which it's like 1 to 2 seconds behind.
Yep.
Like if you go on actual radio, you're right in line with it. Or they have like the Sirius. Remember the Sirius boom boxes they used to have where you'd put the little thing like on top of
it? I do, yep.
When they had all of like the NBA channels and NFL, I still think they do, but they're trying to push everything to the app. But if you still have like the actual boombox with the receiver that's like not built into your car, but it's like on satellite, I guess. That's like 2 to 3 seconds. It's way quicker than any TV. So like if you live in the States and you get the radio and you want to like bet and play because you think a book is slow, that radio's the answer.
I think that makes sense.
Fair enough. I got to add that to that list.
I don't do a lot of live betting. I do appreciate the offer, and I would definitely take some live TV. Like, but it just can't be Rogers at this point. And well, it's such a headache. Like, it's just another headache for me to deal with. I'm sure you guys understand this, but like, I just don't want to deal with it. That's all it comes down to.
No, fair enough. But for the cost, if you're doing it on your own, not live betting, fine. But like, we're doing the Twitter Spaces now. They're doing great. I loved it. It was a great time. But the 30-second delay there was just frustrating. So I'm like, you know what? I'll suck it up, front the bill, and pay for Rob's cable if he's at just at a regular speed. You know, even a 2-3 second delay is fine, but it can't be 30 seconds down the road. He's literally running the next play and he's celebrating the Mike Williams first down.
Anyway, like, here we go. We got a fourth down coming up.
Yeah,
Eric's like, we know the result like of the fourth down play.
He's like, Rob, the result. And honestly, Eric, you're a legend for dealing with that, because I would have left the spaces out of sheer, like, I would have taken it as an insult and left the space. I'm like, I got to be on with this guy. He was being so calm. He's like, Rob, the result is known here. I'm just going to let you know. And you let me know when it's done. And one time he was even like, oh, cause like a sick
play.
And then he was like, something in the other room. He said something like that to not. And I was like, this guy is a true professional. Eric, you're a professional.
That was fantastic.
Adam, I wanted to talk a little bit about covers. For us in Canada, definitely huge familiarity with that brand growing up. That would be, when I first started betting on sports, where I got all of my info for everything. I loved so many things about that site, including seeing the crowdsourced picks, who everyone was picking, but also the team experts for every single game, who are the ones that, you know, built up a record. And I was into trends at the time, had all sorts of stuff that was very useful for me. I'm curious for you, how you got involved with the Covers brand. How did that come about?
Well, just like everything else in life, it was by no way intentional. Last football season, when it ended, we couldn't, all the borders were shut down or whatever. And so I went with the wife to Tofino in BC. And one of my really good friends, Jesse, who was the number three at Pinnacle for a number of years, we sort of like came up together through the industry. He went the very professional route. I went to the Bahamas to book people, importers and exporters. But we always stayed closely connected. And I met up with him in Victoria for lunch and we were walking around. And he knew that at the time, so I don't know if it's like widely known, but last fall, winter, like my plan was to go work for Circa in Las Vegas. It didn't ultimately work out because of being Canadian and everything. But, and so he knew that I was kind of like at the end of an opportunity there. And he was like, wow, did you know that Covers is hiring? I was like, why in the hell would like, why would I ever want to work at Covers? Like,
wait, I'm going to cut you off. Like, you were going to work at Circa?
So this makes a lot of sense now, because I remember I had talked to you. You had left the Matchbook podcast and they had reached out to me saying, Adam can no longer do it. I had reached out to you. You said, you know, it's just a conflict of interest for me. Now some sort of news is coming down soon. And there was a long period of time where no news came down. I'm like, what is Chernoff doing? So, okay, this makes a lot more sense.
You had told me too that you were looking at joining the other side of the table or something like that, the other side of the counter. And then, you just went to Covers. And I was like, oh, I don't consider that the other side of the counter, I guess.
No, but, so that's, definitely not.
Now I understand what you meant. Okay.
But it just came down to like being Canadian and how when you're involved with gaming in the States, there's even just moving to the States as a Canadian on its own is very difficult. But when it comes to something that's like gaming specific and what that entailed and my lack of any university to justify that there was no one, it became really tough. And so I have nothing but good things to say about everyone there and would have loved to be involved in some way. It didn't work out ultimately, but, and so that was correlating with the end of the season. It dragged on for a bit, but I ended up in Victoria and he was like, did you know Covers was hiring a product manager? And I looked at him and I was like, why? And he's like, no, like they're it's legitimate. Like you should give him a call and check it out. And I had no idea. Like I, like Rob, you were saying, like I used the site, I knew what it was. I probably had not been on it for a long time back, like post forums and the scoreboards and the pages with the stats and everything. What I had no idea about was like, it is a massive, at the time it was 60 plus people in a huge office in Halifax that were recently acquired with like just this wide open direction to go. And just like incredibly professional. I assumed it was like two to three guys with a website just somewhere parked in Canada. And so I saw that and I was like, what, this is like really legitimate. And what I liked about them specifically was they, over the last year, had an initiative to remove all of the banner ads and aggressive marketing campaigns for sports books and any of that from all of the info within the site. And so it was like, we're taking that out of there. And the value proposition is genuinely making smarter sports bettors, giving you content to help you improve. And we're just focused on putting out as much content as we can. And then over time, if you value it in some way, that is going to come back to us.
Right.
And so hearing that versus what other competitors are doing. And I mean, you guys read it. Everyone else listening reads it. You can't go more than two sentences in an article without having a push to sign up somewhere or a link or anything like that. And so for me, seeing how professional it was, the direction they were going, but also the willingness to actually like do something that I also believe in. And with it being Canadian, just at the time in my life, it was like the perfect combination of things and just an opportunity that would like give me a chance to do what I like on a daily basis in life, still be involved with betting, but then also actually have a life outside of it for the first time in a long time. And so I've been with them since March of last year. is when I started. And even since then, we're up to over 90 people now in that office, and it's expanded across Canada. So like it's, I had no idea how big it was and how actually passionate about betting the people behind it were.
I had a general idea of how big it was. I had done a lot of work in Halifax previously as well. What a city. Halifax. I don't know. I've never been to Western Canada. Eastern Canada, to me, for those who are even in the U.S., just absolutely gorgeous, beautiful. Like, if you like seafood, if you just like the pubs that they have, like, just the very, Halifax, very, like, college vibe. And I know I'm, like, 35. I'm not hanging out with young kids. It's not the point of it. But it's very, like, energetic. Like, you know, there's a lot of things happening in the city for such a small city. It's one of, actually, my favorite spots in the entire world.
Yeah, you're not missing much out here in Western Canada, especially in the area where I am.
Where are you at
not
right
much
now?
Going on. I'm about 30 minutes northwest of Calgary. Got it. Not quite in like the Canmore area, but just general.
What's it called? What's the city called?
Are you trying to hunt, hunt the guy down or something over here? You need the longitude and latitude as well?
I was wondering if there's any NHL players from there. That's it.
No, I'm west of Cochrane. So like I'm out the door 30 steps left, and it's like, Rob, you watch Yellowstone. It's field until Rocky Mountain. That's all it is. There's nothing.
If you want to look up where he lives, I bet you can just follow those directions and then search golf course, and it's probably lives by the golf course.
There's one nearby. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
You can, you've posted enough pictures from that golf course in the morning that somebody could probably do like a Google overhead view and be able to decipher exactly which one it was as well. It's near a Tim Hortons.
It's called Glen Eagles.
Oh, Glen Eagles. It's close to a Tim Hortons because you do the ice caps in the morning.
Yep, it's on the way.
There you go.
Classic Canadian move. Okay, you know what? Now that we're actually just got into Canada, we'll skip forward to that. For the American listeners, again, this is something that we're more passionate about in terms of regulation in Canada. That's impending right now. It's coming really soon. So, Adam, we wanted to ask about the Canadian regulation, what you think it will open up for Canadian sports bettors, for everything around here. You know, just curious to hear your general thoughts.
Well, it's going to be better than ProLine and Sports Select, that's for sure. BC, from a government perspective, they actually did well. I thought that product, relative to like other offshores or even like bigger regulated ones now in the US, it was actually really well done. Pricing was generally fair. The offerings were solid.
You're talking about play now?
At the time. Sorry?
Play now?
This was, Play Now, BCLC would be offspring of that. Yeah. I had people messaging me and saying like they were taking a fair bet. So good on them for doing that. Alberta, not so much. Quebec, not so much, kind of the opposite side of the spectrum. But I think obviously where you guys are is the big focus in Ontario. The rumor was that it was going live December 6th. Now it's rumored to be March 1st. But now there's also the election that's hanging it up.
Right.
And so it's like a push to get it before. But the latest that we've heard, we've got Jeff Zakodny, who's like the industry analyst, who's on top of everything. But I was chatting with him the other day. He actually is more uncertain about what FanDuel and DraftKings are going to do than the other operators. And so he was looking at it and he was like, PointsBet, who just now announced like another sponsorship opportunity, for whatever reason, they're pushing harder than anyone at this moment. The Score, obviously, with their new office downtown in Toronto on the water, like they're making a big effort for it too. Rush Street is another one that's pushing
that's
pretty aggressively.
For anyone who's at listening.
Yeah, Bet Rivers, exactly. But weirdly enough, like the quietest and most uncertain from what we know internally has been FanDuel and DraftKings. But whenever it comes up, I think pricing is first of mind for us and a lot of people. Like, what's that going to look like? Because like minus 140 aside and mandatory parlays is what's conditioned the Canadian culture for the last like 30 years. So I'm going to be very curious to see, is it just like duplicated from the US? But at the same time, we've seen some states come up with like crazy pricing too, that were in smaller population centers. So I'm curious. Ontario is absolutely going to be first, and that's going to be a big deal when it happens, hopefully this spring in March. But it's going to be interesting to see how much they're willing to sort of bend, especially around some of the business models in Canada too.
So lots of Canadians, especially in Ontario, have been serviced by offshores for many years, and there's been no shortage of them because we have the native reserves in Montreal where a lot of offshores operate, and there's buildings on those reserves. And I'm curious what you think the landscape is going to look like in terms of the number of operators. Like, we have the Bet99s now who have the George St. Pierre as an ambassador, and the
Cool Bet on Women.
Cool Bets, Bet on Women as well with Bet99. Yeah, I shouldn't leave that out.
Yeah.
Cool Bet, Sports Interaction's been a brand in Canada for many, many years. Do you see these offshore operators entering the space in terms of trying to, legally service players? Or do you think that it's going to be a case where a lot of these guys just close up their books and say, okay, we've had enough. We don't really want to pay tax on top of this, and we'll potentially service other regions in the world.
So Sports Interaction, Cool Bet, and Bet Regal are the three that will aggressively push to be regulated within Ontario and probably beyond.
Yeah, those are the ones that are sponsoring a bunch of stuff as well, like CFL sponsorships, NHL, right, stuff like that.
That's kind of the big tip off at the moment to sort of see who's posturing. And they're all offering free play products at the moment on those advertising networks to obviously build up the database, because they're going to have, what's going to be interesting is when you have the existing players that play elsewhere, Bet365, for example, or even a Pinnacle to a lesser extent. But last year at Bet365, Canadians turned over, I think it was $4.5 billion at Bet365. And so everyone that that's just a casual bettor right now in Canada has Bet365 as their go-to app. And so it's to me, what's going to be the interesting thing is not necessarily how SIA or Regal or Coolbet, who are trying to grab some portion of the pie, maybe get involved. But it's what happens with Bet365? Do they go out of their way? Cause money's not a problem for them. Do they try maintain this and hold on to that customer base? And if no, how do these other books that are coming in try get those players away from it? Because I don't know, to this point, we haven't had a scenario, despite there being efforts to close off Bet365. I mean, 8-9 years ago, they were basically keeping the CFL afloat.
Right.
And so the connections that they have, I don't think can be disregarded, but they also have such a huge pull on so many players in the country. When you compare the Bet365 app, say what you like, I'm limited to a buck for anything. I think anyone is who has half a mind about betting. But for the average bettor, if you compare the Bet365 app that we have in Canada to some of the apps that are coming in, and never mind going to a Cool Bet that doesn't have an app, or these lesser books they're trying to get regulated, the experience is so one-sided into Bet365 that I think that alone is going to go a long way to sort of keeping that divide existing. So that's, to me, the big thing to see play out.
I think Bet365, in my opinion, has a killer product, both on app and web. Very nicely laid out. They have tons of markets, which is obviously appealing to their recreational bettor, but also very easy to find. Search function works great. To me, Bet365 is, my opinion, personally, gold standard in Canada right now. I wonder, to me, obviously you're going to get a lot of operators applying for licenses in Ontario. I think whatever Bet365 does has a large impact on whether or not those operators will last in market, because 365, like you said, has such a huge market share right now. It'll be interesting to see if anyone can steal some of that market share. I imagine they will be able to through big bonuses, but the way that you can promote bonuses in Canada is very differently as well from the way you can in the U.S. You see all these affiliates in the U.S. marketing $3,000 free play. Well, we can't do that over here in Ontario. You just have to market your product. You can still give away the bonus, but you can't market that bonus. So I think that's going to have a huge impact. But I'm just curious as to whether you think that, a lot of the conversation is about how big an opportunity Canada is for other operators right now. I've consulted for offshore sportsbooks before, some which service the Canadian market, some which service American market, some which service Australia, so on and so forth. I'm very skeptical on the market size of Canada more so, like a lot of people are bullish on this is a huge untapped market. I think Canadians have actually been betting for a long time. A large majority of them have been able to in some capacity. On top of that, I think Canadians, and it's not a disrespect to any American out there, this is just strictly my experience and factual.
I know where you're going with this.
They hold a lot worse. Like, you know, a standard sports, recreational sports book hold for an American player is roughly somewhere around 7 to 8%. I mean, you can, that's just an average. Canadian players are lower. I mean, my experience is 5 to 6%, in some cases as low as 4%. So from that
perspective, that's because all the players that are playing the lottery are holding.
That's a good, that's 40%. A valid point too. But sure. I'm just wondering what you think of the Canadian market as a whole and whether it's as large as I think the larger population believes it actually is.
Yeah, the CGA has thrown out some just wild estimates, and I'm like, I don't like some of the figures they're throwing out that's like deep in the billions. I'm like, I don't see it. And I think to what you said is very valid. But I think to a more extent, like bet sizing too is nowhere near as high on average in Canada as it is in the United States. Like it's just the risk is not there. But I think like you mentioned too, that if you wanted to go out of your way and bet on sports, you're probably for the most part doing it in Canada. So like the thought that there's like this untapped or unconverted audience, I think any estimates on that are like way too high. And I think pulling people away from the lottery, like if you're going down to the store and you're still playing in cash and you're filling out the Scantron sheets with the pencils, it's because you very much regard the convenience and the trust that you have of betting at that. And like you're conditioned into that. There's a reason that you haven't used your bank account, your debit card, your Visa, Insta debit, whatever, to deposit in any of these apps that have been available for a long time. I don't think that like a FanDuel coming in and offering an attractive bonus is going to be what those players that value that convenience necessarily want. Some of them will, but even if you convert that, like you're getting a $5 a day player that usually parlays 6 to 10 teams together because he's watching it on the couch and wants to win, or your pools player that runs last second on Sunday to fill everything out to watch a full day of NFL games. Like you're not pulling this like massive volume player out of nowhere that hasn't been able to get down anywhere. It's just not the case. So like and it depends how segmented it is too. Like if we're stuck province by province and it's different operators in each and they're offering different things, that makes it really messy as well. So there's a lot that's, I think, overestimated, at least at this point.
Yeah, I think the convenience store player is not the biggest player by any capacity. So when you mention here, like, yeah, if you want to bet in Canada, you could go out of your way. You don't even really have to go out of your way. You could just bet. If you've ever tried to stream anything online and get a pop-up for Bet365, Bodog, any offshore, things like that, you're going to get so much like referral bonuses, things like that. It's available everywhere. So what I honestly think is like anyone who bets right now using the offshore sites, if they get a bonus at FanDuel and it's being constantly jammed down their throat or getting a bonus at any of these things, and they see the brand recognition and they see their buddies posting same game parlays and sharing and referral bonuses, I do think they will sign up at the regulated books just because it'll be a lot easier. They're going to probably own SEO a lot more as well. But I mean, eventually. But what I will say is, all in, the lottery player that you mentioned, like the person who's like doing it for trust and convenience, that's depositing cash. Now that is probably not going to change. The person's paying $5-$10, but the person who's playing maybe on like PPH accounts, had like a local bookie, something like that. Anyone who's had like now any single bad experience or version of like trust and they want to play in cash, they can now go deposit cash at one of these sports books, whether it be over the counter or through an alternate method. And now they can play in cash with a book that's a little bit more reputable. So I think like the PPH market that we have here will probably shrink, although it'll obviously stay somewhat relevant. The lottery market of people at convenience stores will probably shrink and then shift over. And then we'll have a lot of the offshore market, you know, people who are playing at like Bodog or things like that, come over to the regulated market for a bonus or for something like that. And then just those three alone, because we already have so many players that are gambling on a regular basis, so many people that are already like they already know what odds are. You don't have to teach them. You don't have to teach them all these things. We have, it's a really big sports town in Toronto, at least, and all their places in Ontario. I do think it could be a massive market, right? It's the same kind of deal with New York, where like no one in New York is not betting if they don't, like, unless you just don't want to bet, right? But the reason that you're not betting is not because you couldn't find a regulated account. But now that they have these regulated accounts, like, everyone's going to give them a shot and sign up. The key for Canada will be, like, someone who has Bet365, which is already the best player. And, you know, I'm not even going to talk good about 365. I'm holding out for a FanDuel sponsorship, influencer sponsorship. but anyone who's, you know, using those, will they switch over to FanDuel? I don't know. Maybe not on their own, but maybe if they're influenced, if FanDuel wants to sponsor or anything like that, you know what I mean? There might be some opportunity.
TV networks are going to play a large role in this too. TSN's, they signed a significant agreement with one. I don't know if Rogers has made theirs public yet.
No, they haven't. I'd
be curious if they go exclusive. My question here is on that New York point. Would you rather be the biggest operator in Canada or the biggest operator in New York State?
I'd probably rather be, I don't know, New York State or all of Canada?
New York State or all of Canada?
So, I mean, just because of the 365 presence, like, I wouldn't want to come in as a bigger operator in Canada. Like, there's no one who has brand equity in New York right now, right? So I'd rather choose New York, but I'd rather be Bet365 in Canada than Bet365 in New York, for example.
Part of it's also going to be determined by the tax rates that the operators have to pay.
Yeah.
So that would
for
be,
sure.
But I think
New York, market access is going to be, is cheaper in Ontario.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it shakes out to. I'm not launching my own book.
I think it's pretty close on my end. I think that's actually a really good question where you can make a decent argument for either side. Obviously, Ontario is going to be a massive portion of Canada. Quebec, I mean, the multilingual thing is going to turn a lot of people off in the province of Quebec as well, which has always been the case with a lot of the offshore sites as well. So,
yeah,
it's mainly Ontario versus New York, really, when we're comparing it, because Ontario's doing, like, the estimates are 60 to 70% of all the NGR in Canada currently for offshores and PPHs. But
yeah, no, I'm with you guys. And then that becomes, like, when you go Canada-wide, I think population-wise, it's like double of New York State. But even then you think about it and you're like, well, like, how much of Canada is kind of like just empty and not convertible? And then so you get to like the Ontario versus New York, and it's like, yeah, it's massive, but then you think about like how much bigger like New York is in comparison, and like what went into like competing to get into there, and you're like, how much of that is carrying over to Ontario? And it gets like, that's going to be a really interesting like first couple of weeks that unfold for sure.
And like we, you know, just to continue on, but Ontario is obviously very large. But Southern Ontario is very different from Northern Ontario. And the priorities of the people in Northern Ontario are more day-to-day. And I don't want to lump people into a group, but it's very different. We're taking
shots at Sault Ste. Marie.
Well, I don't want any haters from specific spots in Northern Ontario, but that's just the reality of things. It's just a very different lifestyle, even though we're in the same
province. Are we allowed to mention Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds on a gambling podcast right now or no?
Hey, now.
I don't think we can. I've already gotten some calls from people associated with that. I'd rather not.
Sue is going to be, I'll tell you right now, Sault Ste. Marie is going to be a massive betting town if you know.
people running back from there to Thunder Bay.
Yes, that's likely.
Go and close it off?
Yeah, well, listen, this is an educational podcast. I wanted to get some thoughts from Adam here, because he's one of the best educators in the content space. So just going to throw a couple rapid fire things at you, Adam, that potentially someone who's more recreational might be able to listen to and gain some. I mean, it's not just me and Johnny forcing our ideas down other people's throats. Maybe you might agree or disagree or whatever. But if you could give one piece of advice to a new bettor entering this space, what would it be?
Open as many accounts as possible. Even if you don't fund them, just have them and learn to find the best price. I think Johnny said it better earlier in the bug. Like, just shop. Doesn't matter if you're betting or not. Just, their accounts are free to open. Do it.
Thank you for saying that. We will cut that into a short clip and repurpose that for our other platforms as well. Thank you very much. Okay, one common piece of betting advice that you think is often overstated or just straight up false.
It doesn't matter if you beat the closing line or not, as long as you win. I think that's, and it's really tough for people to understand because of the like implied entitlement that comes from beating the closing line, where people will beat, like they'll take a 4.5 in football that closes 4. And they're like, well, I should win now. I beat the closing line. And it's like, that's not the point. You're doing it because it's a process orientated thing. And that half point, you're probably right on line with the vig anyway, if you remove it. So like there's differences within that, but it's hard for people to understand. But when you're just looking at wins or losses, you're leaving out the most important part of everything.
Agreed. Okay. So we're 2 for 2 on agreement here. Last one, this one's actually not even educational, but I just really interested in it. One thing that currently happens in the betting space that, I mean, you're a very positive guy, so maybe nothing drives you insane, but something that kind of drives you up a wall or irks you, and potentially a solution on what can be done to fix it.
Ooh. Are we talking like bookmaker or product offering? Or are we talking like content and people thinking about that?
Anything.
Either.
Either one.
I would say, and this is just because it's like relevant within football, and it kind of goes back to that process and like thinking about that in a way, when people look at like the last series of a game and how it might define a bet, but they leave out the other like 58 minutes of a game and how that played into it. And they're like, well, that was a lucky win, or boy, that was a, you should have lost that one, but you got away with it. And it takes away from like either like how the entire game or bet or the whole market leading up to that transpired, like just having that chunk of it. I think there's so much focus on that, then, and those comments and those discussions are just nuts. From like a product and like offering thing that bookmakers do, I think, again, like I kind of alluded to it, you could go off on limiting for a long time, but I would say now what we're starting to see, which is for some reason becoming more common, is like unclear terms or like gaming around terms of either bonuses or just like day-to-day markets with all of these specials and things that are popping up. There's just a massive lack of transparency. That's almost, it's not like, I think for a while it was like a lack of potentially understanding, but I feel like now you see that books get it and they understand, but now they're like intentionally gaming around it with terms or how they offer things or how things are listed, one-way markets without a way to play back the other side. There seems to be a lot of that that's sort of multiplying for some reason that I don't know why that's taking off.
Yeah. In some instances, it borders on predatory, in my opinion.
It does.
When you're just, you know, you can bet a team to win the Super Bowl, but you cannot bet them not to win the Super Bowl type of thing. That's just a random market, but that kind of stuff irks me as well. So I think 3 for 3 in terms of agreement, because both those things you actually mentioned bother me. Before we get to our closing question, let people know where they can find your podcast and what you're doing with Covers Now, which they can check out from a content perspective as well.
Sure. The Simple Handicap is on Apple and Spotify. It's in year 4. You will find it for like another 2.5 weeks, and then it'll be gone till the off season in August. So it's just a football daily podcast. But then on Covers, doing Covers Daily live stream on YouTube every weekday until the Super Bowl. And then beyond that, still a little bit undecided, but I'll just be posting about that on Twitter.
I am a Simple Handicap listener.
Really?
Often have to catch myself when I do my Sunday morning NFL stream, because I start my stream by saying good morning, everyone, which I'm like, I got to stop doing that. And every week I remind myself, and every week I don't. And for those who don't listen to Simple Handicap, that's Adam's sign-on line at the beginning. So yes, I am a I'm starting to consume more content in the space, whereas I almost never did. Part of it is because I drive to the BetStamp office a couple times a week. And when I'm in the car, I just put on a podcast and listen to it type of thing. So I am a simple handicap listener. Won't say I listen to every single episode, but I do get them in here and there with some other podcasts in the space that I enjoy.
I appreciate that.
All right, Adam, let's end it off here. You've been very generous with your time. I think this is a really good episode. We do have a closing question we ask to every single guest that comes onto the show. If you could go back 5 years in time and talk to a previous version of yourself, what piece of advice would you give to your old self?
Oof, exactly 5 years. I'll just go like to that general time when things were saying, I would say put more of a value on patience. I am very antsy and always doing something and trying to move around and come up with something new or great. And I don't do well just kind of like sitting and letting things build. And that probably has been a leak in betting, but also in like daily life too, where I've just tried to push things a little bit too far when it probably would have been better just grinding it out and waiting and building something over time. So I'm learning that somewhat now, but if I could have been a lot more patient years ago, I may have been in a different spot today for the better.
I think that's a really good piece of advice. It beats a lot of the, I would tell myself to buy Bitcoin things that we get, which I mean.
Well, would have been nice, but.
Exactly. It's not doing anyone a service now to tell them that you should have
bought Bitcoin
5 years ago. appreciate your time, Adam. You can check out his podcast, The Simple Handicap. Check out all the stuff he's doing with covers. I do love the halftime streams that you have as well during the games, which are pretty cool. The second half bets, I mean, small sample, but they've been hot this year. And actually all your NFL plays have been good this year. Candidly, before we log off, I'll tell you a real true story. I subscribe to Twitter notifications for you. I probably curse you more than anyone on planet Earth on a weekly basis when I get the Sunday night pick or Monday morning pick on a side that I agree with. Because you do have market influence. People tend to follow you in general. But I occasionally get like 1 out of 10, maybe a little bit higher than that, where you're on the opposite side of a game that I like. And I'm just there fist pumping. And I'm like, here we go. Going to get a great number on this game. Not that I resent you or anything for that. It's just, I mean, I have to try to keep up with the space and what other people are betting and why a number moved the way that it did. It's just part of my process. But yeah, that's so people follow Adam on Twitter. Good information at Adam Chernoff. But yeah, the Twitter notifications on a weekly basis, I'm like, ah, damn. I'm not saying damn it. I'm saying much worse words than that. But I'm like, why did we have to do this right now?
Can you say if any of them lined up this week with what you were thinking, or am I in for a rough Saturday and Sunday?
No. So I absolutely love the number you got on San Fran. I would have for sure.
BOL left it hang. I don't know what they were doing. They had it up for like 15 minutes. And I was like, I can't. I felt that was the one probably bet of the entire year that I felt bad posting. Cause I was like, this is kind of scummy of me to post it. So I should have posted 3, but like that number they hung was nuts.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I tend to not even look at the BetOnline openers or even the lines on Monday. I actually try to avoid. I do most of my betting starting on Tuesday, just for reasons I don't want to get into. But part of it is limits. Part of it's a number of other things. But I typically don't look early. But I do subscribe to your notifications, so now when I go on Tuesday or Wednesday. And I'm doing my work, I can kind of understand why something might have moved early, potentially. Just, again, part of the process. I like to consume as much information as possible, and I feel like it's just really valuable to know that kind of stuff.
Awesome. No, so San Francisco lines up. I saw you at New England, which I was slow to get to, but I'm glad that at least one of them is on the same side.
Yeah, I mean, it's the playoffs. I could honestly shut it down at the beginning of playoffs every year, and I probably wouldn't be leaving much on the table, is my honest feeling about it. I think it's just so easy to make lines on NFL games once we have these large samples on these teams that,
yep.
And they're fully motivated. Like, you kind of really know what you're going to get out of each team, that it's just a little bit tougher. So I completely understand why someone would want to bet an early market, because you do get those numbers that are posted right away, which is just your opinion versus the odds maker and no other people from the market having influence on that number yet. So I get it. I never resent anyone for it. To each their own. And But I just want to throw that out there because I do mention your name probably 3 or 4 times a week when I get that notification. And I'm like, oh, man. But that's it. I appreciate your time, Adam. Wish you all the best.
No, thanks very much, guys. Keep on doing the show. It's great, and we're all enjoying it. And the pros that you get on and the advice that you guys have done in 37, 38 episodes now has been invaluable. So keep pushing and keep the app going as well.
I appreciate that. All right, we'll see everyone next week.